Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is brought to you by the Era Media Group, publishers of ShowSite Magazine. Together, we are strong supporters of the American Kennel Club and the preservation of our purebred dogs. Okay, crew, before we get into today's show, I am super excited to tell you about something new here at Pure Dog Talk. We know breeders are the lifeblood of our sport. We celebrate and honor our master breeders. So we're bringing you Breeders' Voice. Breeders' Voice sits down with top breeders, sharing their secrets, how they got where they are, the joys, and maybe even the heartbreaks. If you haven't had a chance, click the Don't Miss an Episode button so you'll get these in-depth articles delivered free along with your podcast. Sign up on our Facebook page or at puredogtalk.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are joined again by Vicki Ronchette, and she is the author of several books on positive training methods for show dogs. And we are going to do some problem solving, talk about some very specific things that you can do with your show dog. So welcome, Vicki.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad we could have you back again. So I know one of your particular books, and this is the one I can remember off the top of my head, From Shy to Showy, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what got you started on that particular book, and then we can talk about some of the specific problem-solving methods that are involved in that, okay?
Okay, that sounds good. So, From Shy to Showy started out as a workshop, because I do a lot of work with people whose big issue with their show dogs is that the dog is shy, or frightened, or worried. Or sometimes it's a breed-specific, more aloofness. They're just sort of not really into it. They're easily offended by people getting right into their space immediately. So I created a workshop where we did the process that I teach people, but then we did it in a group so that everybody was on the same page, so that people had other people who knew each dog's limitations, what piece we were on of the desensitization process with each dog, so that everybody sort of knew what to do, and it gave us an opportunity to set the dog up to be desensitized by going through what we needed to go through over and over and over while pairing it with food, and everybody was on the same page, and the dogs get time to get out and work and then be put back in and rest while we switch and work with the other group of dogs. So it was very powerful. And on my blog and on my Facebook group, Positive Training for Show Dogs, one of the biggest things was that people would come on and say, my dog's afraid. So that's where From Shy to Showy came from. It's not my, I didn't invent it. It's all science-based training. It's a combination of desensitization, which is exposing the animal to the trigger that makes them uncomfortable, but at a very controlled level, and then pairing that exposure with something that the dog really wants, and that's the counter-conditioning part. I'm not looking for dogs to just stop doing a behavior. I want dogs to actually learn to be comfortable and really love showing. So I'm looking to shift their whole emotional state from being worried and not liking the ring to actually feeling comfortable and hopefully enjoying the ring.
So is this like a five-step process? Where do you start with them? I know there's going to be some very specific individual pieces, but what's sort of a general suggestion for our listeners?
Yeah. So it does depend on what the animal's individual trigger is, the trigger being whatever makes them uncomfortable. So for some dogs, it's other dogs. For some dogs, it's the judge's exam. For some dogs, it's a piece of the judge's exam. Maybe it's only the testicles, or maybe it's only the bite. It's a piece. For some dogs, it's the environment. For my dog, Opie, who's on the cover from Shy to Showy, it was vehicles. He doesn't like those carts driving by, and he doesn't like cars driving by. He loves people. He loves other dogs. But that piece poisoned it for him because it was always present at dog shows. So we need to figure out first. And that's how I go about any behavior issue with the show ring. It's called an applied behavior analysis, and I'm just now bringing this terminology to the show dog world because I think that people can handle it. I think that this is not too nerdy and scientific. An applied behavior analysis just means that you look at the behavior, that's the behavior you don't like, you look at what happens right before it, we call that the antecedent, that's what causes the behavior to happen, and then we look at what happens right after, the consequence. those two things fuel the behavior. The antecedent has to be there, and the consequence has to keep reinforcing the behavior. So I pull it apart in that way and say, what can I do to change the dog's behavioral response? And I can change it by changing right before the behavior and right after the behavior. But with fearful dogs, you have an emotional component. So it stops being about operant conditioning, meaning the animal does a behavior for a consequence. With fearful individuals, it's classical conditioning, meaning that there's just an association. There's just an association with an emotional response. So it gets a lot more challenging, because when you're dealing with something like fear, you can't punish or force an animal into feeling better about something. You know, you can squash behavior you don't like, but you can't say, you better feel better about this, or you're going to get it. So we have to go through the process, and the people who go through the process and actually desensitize correctly usually end up with dogs who do just fine in the ring. There are a lot of them who don't end up loving it, and it's not because they're flawed. It's because, you know, it's a more primitive breed, or they just aren't into it. But we can get them mostly to the point where we can finish him. I'd be lying if I said it happens with all of them. There have been a few where it's like, I would never show this dog, partly because people and other animals aren't safe. If you have a dog who's actually injured people, I don't think it's okay to take it in there and have a stranger touch it every week. Somebody could get hurt, and the dog is living in constant state of stress and anxiety. That's really unhealthy. But most of them, we can teach them to be comfortable with it. But so many people think that desensitization means just making him do it. Just keep putting him out there. He'll be okay. He'll get better. And best case scenario, he gets better from that. He habituates to it. But a lot of dogs don't. A lot of dogs sensitize, meaning that they actually get more reactive and worse if they're forced into it over and over and over again without doing a systematic desensitization protocol.
So I'm going to give you a case study. So my case study is, say, a Spinoni Italiano that didn't experience much of the world before he became a show dog. And anytime there's a flapping anything, he hits the ground. So let's go through that process. How do you desensitize this animal to flapping stuff?
Well, the first thing that I would want to do is I would want to identify if the reaction is visual or if it's auditory. So is he responding to what he sees, or is he responding to what he hears? Because I might switch how I expose him to things depending on that. I probably will. Now, if he's worried of both, if it's just like, it doesn't matter if it's making a flapping noise and it's also a big visual flapping. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I need to peel that apart further.
I would say we're going to go with a case that it's both.
Okay, which wouldn't surprise me at all. So the first thing I'm going to tell the client, which makes a lot of people uncomfortable, but I really try and talk them into pulling the dog from the ring until we deal with this. Because he's never going to be competitive or look good if you don't have his head. I mean, we have to have the dog's head. We have to have them emotionally stable, and we have to have them feeling like they're safe with us and they can trust us. So a lot of times I'm going to say, I would like to pull the dog from the ring, but I'm going to take the dog to shows to do some of our work, because I may need some of those things in our process. So let's say that it's the flapping of things. And let's say that's the only thing that this dog reacts to. He's rock solid with everything else. I am going to look at his age, because things go a little bit wonky during adolescence. So even though I always support them through any issues they have, I still am looking at, oh, this could also be partly his age and going through this adolescent period where they're much more reactive and they don't always process and think about things as much as they would. Then I need to set it up to where I can get access to something that flaps that trigger. So let's say I can't make it happen. Let's say I need to go to a dog show to make that happen. So what we look for is what we call in behavior modification the threshold. So I always want the animal sub-threshold. Sub-threshold means that he's aware of the trigger. So he's identified it, but it's far enough away that he feels comfortable. And by being comfortable, the way I'm going to test that is, can he eat? So if you have a dog who's normally foodie, will he pick food? I'm also going to be looking at things like the quality of his mouth on my hand. Does he get sharkier? Because that means he's starting to get more anxious probably, or arousal's going up in some way. I'm going to see if he can hear me. So if I give him a known cue, a learned cue, or even just say his name, can he respond to me and hear me? Can he peel his eyes away from that trigger, or is he panicked? So if any of those things aren't happening, you're too close to the trigger. So for one dog, it could be 10 feet. For another dog, it could be 300 feet. you have to find that sweet spot within the individual where he's aware of the trigger, but he still is responsive. He can eat food. He's relatively calm, and he's not gone to where he's having a meltdown and really worried about it or overly concerned by it. So then what we do is we give him little bits of exposure to that. So let's say I was at a dog show, and the flapping flag at one of the vendors is going to be my trigger target. So then I get the dog far enough away, and let's say for this dog it's 50 feet. So there's some other vendors down there or a vehicle, and I've got the dog behind the vehicle, and I'm armed with food, and I'm going to walk him out and let him notice that. I'm going to pair that with food, feed, open bar, and take him back. So what I'm trying to teach him is that that scary thing becomes predictive of something really good for him. So when he sees that scary flapping thing, he always gets chicken right after. So I'm going to do that until his response becomes anticipatory. So the minute I take him out, he looks at that thing and gets all happy looking at me. Now I'm going to know I can move a couple feet closer, and then I'm going to work at that distance. And then you just keep doing that until you get as close as your goal is to the trigger. And it can take different lengths of time with individual dogs. It really depends. I mean, I've had dogs where they were snapping at judges. You were not going to get past this dog's waist without him turning around and trying to bite someone. Where I could examine him all over, because the moment he learned that he had control and he could let us know his discomfort and we could back off, he started to become so much more confident that he would allow me to do anything, because he had learned to communicate without having to go to the bite. And that's another thing that I always make people do. Like, the first lesson is, I need you to know exactly what your dog looks like when he's comfortable and relaxed. Because if you know what he looks like when he's relaxed, you can start to notice small stress signals when they're just tiny signals before he's had a complete meltdown and you can't get him back.
And that, I think, is really good. And it goes to developing that bond between the dog and the exhibitor, the dog and the owner, the dog and the handler, whatever it is, to really be able to dial into that dog. And as you say, I love your phrase, get their head, because that is something that makes a lot of sense to me. Get in the dog's head is how you deal with these dogs. And you have to interact with them in such a way that you really understand them and really feel when they're about to go sideways.
Right, exactly. Because then when you start to see a subtle signal, it means the dog is just starting to tip, right? He's just starting to go to the place you don't want him to go. So that gives us an opportunity to change things up and make it to where he can handle it. So if you've got a dog who's just mildly unsure of other dogs, and you've got him in the ring, and he's pretty okay, but he's starting to worry about that dog, and you just see him start to stare a little bit, maybe you just do a few hand touches with him. Get him doing something else. Doing something fun that he likes. Keep a couple of hand targets, rewarding that. Ask for a couple other behaviors, reinforce those. And then you get him sort of cognitive again, able to respond and thinking about something else. So if it's really mild, someone's just doing a little change-up like that can help. If the dog is really fearful of people, that's when it gets really sticky. Because if the dog is really afraid of a stranger touching him, it is extremely relationship damaging to make him endure that every weekend and ignore all his signals that he's not okay. If he's saying, I can't do this, and you're saying, nope, got to do it, what people hope for is that he'll get better. And sometimes they do. But most of the time, if they get better, they never love it. They tolerate it. And they finish their championships and then they're put away. They don't want to be conspicuous. But if you do it the right way, then you can actually have a chance of teaching them to be a lot more comfortable with it and actually hopefully enjoy it. That's what I want. I want enthusiasm.
And talk to us a little bit, because I have personally encountered this watching other people with their dogs. And I say to them, this dog needs to be socialized. And they take the dog and they drag it all over the showgrounds and make 90 million people pet it. And I'm like, not quite what I'm saying. So talk to us a little bit about how to do this in a good way. Specifically, how. I've got this dog. It thinks that this whole dog show thing just is not cool beans. So rather than, as you say, forcing it into more stress, what's your solution?
Well, again, it always depends on the individual. But for some dogs, if somebody tells me that the dog never wants to come out of his crate, then I'm going to bring his crate, and I'm going to probably have him on a cart and do a lot of wheeling around on the crate, pairing it with food. Then when I'm ready to, I'm going to open the crate and then let him choose about coming out. And it's not going to be like, here's a cookie, come out, because we get into trouble a lot of times by using food inappropriately. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to use food to trick dogs into doing things. If he chooses to get out, I will deliver pounds of food. But I'm not going to say, you want this good food, then you better do that scary thing. Because then you can create conflict and get the dog to where they're really not doing it because they're comfortable. They're doing it because there's food, which is different than them making a choice and then food appears, because then they start to want to hang out a little bit more. So I don't let people go over dogs who are fearful until I know who's going over them and until the dog's really ready for that. So usually it ends up being in my classes, other clients or friends at the dog show who will listen clearly to instructions of exactly what it needs to look like. Because people can get in there and they'll say, oh, I had a dog like this, you just got to do this. But you can really damage a dog that way. So for me, it's always very systematic. Now, I'll take them to the dog show and pair it with food and pair it with play and let them meet people. And whatever part they really are comfortable with, really, really doing a lot of that. So let's say they love people, but they don't love other dogs. Then I'm going to really let them visit a lot of people, because all of that good emotional response to all the people visiting is going to bleed into how they view the show world and being at a dog show. But part of my other training is being done away from the show, in classes or at parks, things like that. All my puppies went to puppy class, and now I sort of got away from that, and I'm raising them more like sport dogs. So they go to a lot of places, they meet a lot of people, but I just don't want constant free-for-alls with other dogs and people anymore. I want them to be able to focus on me and not just think that everything's a free-for-all. So I'm a big fan of taking them to shows, but like you said, they don't need to be overexposed. They need to be adequately exposed, and pairing that exposure with something that's good for them so that they like it and develop a good emotional response to the dog shows.
And I take dogs that maybe need some work, and I'll just take them to the dog show, and they are not entered. There's no stress. They're just right along. And I think it's important for our exhibitors out there who have a new puppy and they're so excited, and let's enter it at Portland Rose City Classic. No, please don't.
I always recommend that a puppy's first show is one day so we can collect a baseline. Now, we need to know where they're at. I mean, a great show dog after 4 days can just be exhausted and hammered. So I'm not going to put a new baby into that. I want them wanting more. I want to put them away while they're still like, no, let me keep doing it. It's like, next weekend, so that they learn to love it.
Exactly. And they get to go to dog shows, again, where there's no performance-related stress, right? Like, they're just there. People feed them cookies.
Yep.
They get patted on the head, and they go home.
They're hanging out with their buddies.
Yep.
They're hanging out with other dogs who know all about this and are comfortable.
You make a great point there, Vicki. Maybe you can expand on that. I think that one is critical, and it doesn't apply for all of our listeners. They maybe only have one dog. But when you have the opportunity, dogs will learn from one another, and they'll either learn to be panicked or they'll learn to be happy. They learn from each other, and I would love to hear you expand on that a little bit.
I do believe that that's very true, and I feel like dogs do learn from other dogs, and particularly family members or close friend dogs. And also, dogs who are a little bit unsure, having a dog who's really confident is a great buffer to build confidence, because that dog will go in and take all of the social interaction, but the other dog is still there. And also, if a dog's not really comfortable and a person comes up and is greeted with another dog, that dog is actually being reinforced. He's feeling good and not having to approach, but probably a lot of these dogs are conflicted. They do like people. They do want to go to people, but they just have that conflict where there's something about it worries them. You can see that they want to go up, but they can't. So it can be really powerful that they're in fairly close proximity to a person who's interacting with another dog that they're comfortable with. They're learning from that.
I call it stable ponies. Over the years, every one of them has had a stable pony. You know, when you have those dogs that
are
nervous or shy or uncertain at the ring, I will put them with a dog that's very confident, and I'll walk them together to the ring. And that racehorse terminology, right? Stable pony. That dog will stand outside the ring, and they'll be like, oh yeah, touchstone.
No, I think that that's really, really powerful. And I think it's a kindness to the animal. We just think it's like we're just going to a dog show, but imagine if we had to go in there and stand and be stared at and be touched by strangers in the most intimate ways, you know?
Get your hand out of my junk.
Yeah, it's asking a lot. And it's not asking a lot of a dog who loves it, but it's asking a lot of a dog who's uncomfortable with it. So I feel anything we can do to make this a more comfortable and relaxed and enjoyable experience, I am all for. And I am going to utilize dogs who are good teachers and can do things I can't do. And I think that it's good for both of them.
Okay, so let's do a very specific task. We want to teach a shy dog to free stack, which is where shy dogs often will curl up inside themselves, right? Like they don't have that desire to be on stage and stand up and say, here I am, beautiful. So process, step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got a dog that I want to make more confident, more proud of itself. What is my process?
So does he already have a free stack?
No, this is a brand new dog that knows nothing.
I usually shape free stacks. I do it a couple different ways. Every puppy that comes here that I'm going to train, I use stacking boxes a lot. I'm a big fan of stacking boxes, which is a little low box, a couple inches off the ground, that has a plank for the front legs and a plank for the back legs. So all my show puppies are trained on those, and they're hand-fed their meals standing on those. So I just want to instill the muscle memory of being in that position. Also, sometimes babies don't have the muscle strength to hold a stack like they're going to need to do it as adults. But they seem to be able to do it for very short periods on the stacking box, so I'll use that. Then I do sessions where I use a clicker for free stacking, and at first I'm just clicking any standing in front of me. Any standing gets clicked and treated. If you haven't taught a sit, it happens really fast. If you taught a sit, you have to reinforce some stands or they're going to keep offering sits. Once they can offer the stand over and over and over again, then I teach them the cue step, and that means to move a front foot forward. And which foot I want them to move is prompted by my body and how I move. And then I'm also going to teach them back, which means to step back a back foot to meet the other back foot. That's how I teach a stack. I do it on the stacking table box, and then I do shaping it, where we're first reinforcing standing, then we're reinforcing stepping forward, putting that on cue, and then I put back on cue. Then I'm getting free stacks. Once I have that, then I usually put them on a platform and teach distance and duration that way. Because if a dog's on a platform, they're less likely to step forward. So I'll put them on a platform and start working on moving away from them, changing my hand position with the lead so my hands can be low and I can deliver food without the dog moving, and building duration so they're holding it for a period of time. So I would go through that whole process and teaching the free stack. But this is a really important piece of it. And this is the clearest way I know how to say it. Emotional state will trump training. That means that even if I've done a beautiful job of teaching a free stack, if the animal is worried, you won't get it in the ring. Because it's not a behavioral choice. It's just a response. It's what his body does when he gets worried. He just starts to shrink up and want to disappear and look smaller and smaller and smaller. Doesn't want to be seen. So it always comes back to, you got to get him comfortable with the environment. And I think that drives people crazy because they're like, but he does it beautifully at home. Of course he does, because he can do it at home, because he's not afraid at home. But now you're asking him to make himself conspicuous. So it's going to come back to more of getting him more comfortable in the show environment, which is going to mean going to dog shows, not entering him, making it super fun, making him comfortable with the whole environment. And again, it may be a piece or it may be something. And then just start asking him to free stack there. Reinforcing the heck of it. I would do short periods. If the dog loves something like a ball, though it will increase arousal, I would use something really fun that the dog really likes. I pulled out white plastic bags for sight hounds, tennis balls for some dogs, tug toys for cattle dogs. You know what I mean? It just depends on the individual. But I'm going to pair what he loves with dog shows and with the behavior of stacking. So I would do all the stack practice at home. At the same time, I would be taking the dog to shows but not entering him. And then I would marry those two things together to where now I'm asking to do this at the showgrounds, not entered. Then I would be having friends start to go over them and build it that way. And then I would put them in the ring. It sounds like a huge, long process, but it can go fast.
Again, depends on the individual. I had a client, Doug, many years ago who just was scared of life. And we had to find a place that she was comfortable. It started out the only place she was comfortable at the entire dog show was directly in front of her dog crate. I called it expanding her comfort zone. So then she was comfortable in the setup, and then she was comfortable in the potty pen, and then she was comfortable next to the ring. And so that expanding the comfort zone and thinking of it in that way really helped that particular dog. And it took a while with that one.
But you did it because you did it right. If you had said, you know what? No, you got to do this. You're going to be in the ring. She might have done it and the dog might have stopped fighting after a while, but it wouldn't have ever been great for the dog. And the dog probably would not have gone beyond getting a championship because it's just not competitive if they don't look like they really want it. So that's beautiful that you did that process. And the only thing that I would add to that is that I make sure that in the beginning, it's like a lot of choice. The dog has to know that they have control and they can make it stop. If people go crazy because they go, well, then she's never going to choose to do it. Yes, she will. If you do it right and you start letting them choose, they start making the choice you want because that's what you're reinforcing. But that choice is a very, very, very powerful piece. Like when you're working that little dog in front of the crate and she says, I need to go back in the crate, I would be like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
And if you say, that's fine, go in the crate, she's going to come back out in a second and go like, oh my gosh, she let me go back in there. Let's do some more of that fun stuff. And then you start getting more and more confidence and you're able to move the dog away from the crate. And then she was dancing around a little bit more and spending a little bit more time. And that's how you go about building it.
I think it's really interesting. And I always enjoy talking to folks like you. And I really appreciate your time with us, Vicki. And I've had this conversation with other handlers and people who've been at this for a long time. And it's interesting to me how many of us do a lot of what you're talking about and don't even realize that it has a name.
Exactly. You know, I think that a lot of people who are really skilled, it's just intuitive.
Right.
It's how you would do it with a friend, you know, or it's how you would do it with a family member. It's just being compassionate. There is a lot of skill and planning and, you know, making sure you're doing it right. But a lot of it is just, oh, you don't like this, buddy? How can I make you like this more? Because that's really what we want to do, right? How can I make this be more enjoyable for you? And the process works. The first time I offered this Shy to Showy workshop, I had somebody who had been in her breed for over 40 years. I had someone who was in her breed for over 30 years and someone who was in their breed for 20 years. To me, that was so impressive. These people, I'm not going to teach them anything about their breed, but they knew that they had hit a wall and that they had never experienced this before. And they're like, I don't know what to do about this. And one of the dogs couldn't be touched. I mean, she would be very worried if people tried to touch her. And the dog's number one in her breed now. And yes. It was because this person who's super skilled and knows all about the breed said, I need help with this one. And I just think that's so great because it's not what everybody knows how to do or feels comfortable dealing with if they haven't seen it before, especially if they're in a breed, in one breed. And it's just like, this is not normal for this breed. What do I do? Right.
Excellent. Well, Vicki, thank you so very much for your time. I know our listeners will appreciate your input, and I do too. And we will make sure that there are links on the website so that folks can track down more information that you might have to offer. So, again, I appreciate your time, Vicki. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk, brought to you by the Era Media Group, publisher of ShowSite Magazine, your home for purebred dogs.